Testing.
Is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. We will get started with the business of the day. Secretary Gonsher, good morning.
Good morning, sir, and good morning to you, Madam Comptroller and Mr. Treasurer. There are 17 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
Okay, thank you. May I have a motion to approve the Secretary's agenda? Is there a second? Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary.
Yes, sir.
We proceed with the Department of Natural Resources. Secretary Kurtz, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, Josh Kurtz, Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. The department has 9 items on our agenda today, totaling 14 projects, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any discussion of the agenda? May I have a motion to approve the DNR agenda?
Motion to approve the DNR agenda.
And is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Mr. Secretary. We will go next to the University System of Maryland. Mr. Hickey, good morning.
Thank you, Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. There are 5 items for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to take a moment to highlight item 5, which is the request of the University of Maryland College Park, potentially a joint venture with the village at the same time. To add 15,000 square feet of construction, 15 open space, several districts. The reason I wanted to highlight this one is because the project is going to be immediately adjacent to the future Purple Line. Riverdale Park North Station, which is going to allow the university to add transit-friendly retail opportunities at the facility. It's going to help to advance the state's quantum of capital funding initiative. It's the fourth floor of slab space and is a gold standard for quantum infrastructure, which is also sensitive to vibration. And this is going to expand opportunities for additional quantum companies to lease these labs and on slab spaces here in the state of Maryland. So we're excited about how this project should be just going to merge a lot of focus and interest about how can we more transportation options, environmental sound transportation options, and also by capital to the state. So welcome to this. Is there any other discussion on the USM agenda?
The governor, if I can hand down, this is the one, the ground lease.
Correct. Yeah.
Let me ask one, just on this point, and I'm fully in favor of the project, so no one been different, but I'm curious, there was a provision in there that said, once we do it one time, that if there are any changes or at subsequent, subsequent owners or change owner, it doesn't have to come back to the board. Was there a reason for that? Probably not an issue, but I'm just curious as to why that specific provision was inserted.
I have Ed McGinnis, who's the vice president for real estate, on the line, but it's a joint venture. And it's my understanding that if the other private partner decides that they want to leave the deal, then the university has the right of first refusal. So the university could purchase their share of the development, the joint venture. But the parameters of the deal will not change. The parameters of the deal that's before you today will not change. And Ed, I don't know if you're on the line, if you can chime in.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I am on the line. I appreciate the question. The answer to that question is that provision is necessary to attract financing for the project. So just to sort of go back over the conditions, the University of Maryland is investing $8 million in real property. St. John's, our joint venture partner, is investing $13 million of private capital to bring this improvement out of the ground. In order to finance that private capital, you have a bank. The lease itself is the sole collateral for the bank. It's really the bank's interest here that has that assignability, because if, and I hate to say this, but if something goes wrong and there is a foreclosure, a bank will be far less likely, if at all likely, to lend money if in order to have this come into their portfolio, in order to assign it to somebody else, they need to come back and seek external political approvals, which they don't understand. So money will go, money like water goes to where it flows easiest, and this provision is necessary to attract financing. It's pretty much that straightforward.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Is there any other discussion on the USM agenda? Okay, may I have a motion to approve the USM agenda?
Motion to approve the USM agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll proceed to the MDOT agenda. Mr. Donsky, good morning.
Good morning, Evan. Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, my name is Valerie Radomski, Chief Procurement Officer for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today we are presenting 12 agenda items for your consideration, and we have representatives available to answer any questions you may have.
Great, thank you so much. I actually just wanted to take a moment to highlight item 12, which is a request from our SHA to award a $1 million contract up lunch to General Dynamics of Technology, the maintenance and support services for the advanced transportation management system, ultimately not ACMS. The reason I want to highlight it is because ATMS just plays a very significant role when it comes to supporting safe roadway operations, emergency responders, maintenance crews, and just having a coordinated response, and specifically when it comes to our 40 highway action response team or our SHART team. This is incredibly important. These services help to reduce risk for workers, improve traffic management, expediting incident response, reducing likelihood for secondary crashes in work zones. But also importantly, we see and we continue, unfortunately, see how necessary this is. Just last month, we lost two of our dedicated public servants who were tragically struck while they were performing maintenance on our highways. They were struck by a car and they were just simply doing their jobs. At our last remote works meeting, I was not able to attend our lieutenant having received my stay because I was appointed for the future. The work of ATMS and also CHART are essential in making sure that we can reduce these type of tragedies inside the future. And by approving this contract, the board is once again just demonstrating our commitment to ensuring the safety and well-being of our hybrid workers. I also think we have a speaker request this morning in the interest of time. We'll ask that the speakers limit their comments to no more than 3 minutes. Ms. Secretary, I've asked if you serve as timekeeper on that. We have a speaker request for item two. This is a request for the Maryland Aviation Administration to award a $2.4 million contract to Townsend Mechanical Incorporated to convert an unused space into additional cabin components and arrive over the market. So I'd like to recognize Tracy Lego, who was signed up to speak in opposition to this item. Ms. Lego, good morning.
Morning. Morning, Governor and Comptroller, Treasurer. We're coming to speak in opposition of this, not because we're opposed to the contract itself, but because we want to draw your attention to the failure of the MAA and Fraport to move the concessions program at BWI. I have with me Derica Johnson, who is a Starbucks worker at the airport. Luckily, Derica serves on the bargaining committee with me at HOST, and we're able to bargain about the wages there. But many, many, many workers at the airport, the vast majority, do not have a union and are not able to bargain. And unfortunately, Fraport has continued to make contracts. First of all, the entire concessions program has been stalled. To our knowledge, since Fraport took over in February of 25, there has been only one new lease signed. And Fraport continues to do business with many, many, many bottom feeder companies that unfortunately are paying wages at the state-owned airport. They're at or barely above minimum wage. And this means that many, many of the workers, unlike Derica, that are able to bargain, who is able to bargain, are working in places where they're making less than $33,000 a year. Many of those workers do not have full-time hours. Derica asked me to bring up that they also, many, many, many of them, because obviously on those wages, you can't buy a car, and the the light rail, which is the main mode of transportation. It runs very infrequently, often stops, which is also under MDOT, also often stops before workers are able to leave the airport for their shifts. We have workers that are sleeping in the airport because they are unable to get back and forth to Baltimore City. And so this is obviously a failure of Fraport. We were worried about this when they took over the contract, but it's also become quite clear that the MAA is not doing its part to move this forward, and we wanted to ask Governor for you to direct your attention to that, and we'd also ask the board to investigate this failure of the concessions program by Fraport and the MAA at the airport.
A little confused. That's not what the idea is, if I'm misinterpreting. I may be violating a couple of points here, but this, I thought this was just about a ticket counter expanding. Do I have wrong information?
It's true. They're taking space that used to be in the concessions program for BWI and allotting it to the ticket counter. And while we don't have opposition to that per se, we did want to take that opportunity to highlight how stalled the concessions program is and the effect that that's having on voters in Maryland and Maryland residents.
If you're not really that related to this item, it's just so the opportunity to.
That's right.
Unless there's anything else we ask about. Executive Director, I should have written down, and you also come to the reporting as well. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Madam Comptroller and Mr. Treasurer. I certainly want to acknowledge, and we acknowledge what was just stated in regards to that. The Fraport and the MAA is not involved in the negotiations. These are direct negotiations with the union and the tenants. And so those are things that certainly we know that exist, and we'll continue to work with them to try and move that forward. But that is not something that we're directly involved with. But I would like to make a statement about one of the other items on the agenda, if I may.
Can we stay on this item for 1 second?
Oh, certainly.
I just want to clarify that this space where Duplaw used to be, one of the remarks on the agenda item says that it's no longer part of the leasable space in Fraport Baltimore's contract. Can you confirm when and how that space was removed from Fraport's leasehold?
Yes, Madam Controller, that was removed, I believe, in 2021. This tenant actually went out of business. They made a business and financial decision to close that location. After they closed that location, that was removed from the proposal that was put out in 2023, the RFP. So that particular location was shown as not available, and none of the proponents even planned to use that. Fraport is not planning to use that.
Thanks, and I just want to have my revenue administrator head on for this question, because of course, when we voted on the Fraport contract, one of the key pieces of that is, you know, the airport, the concessions program generates a large amount of sales tax revenue, and I just wanted to clarify that that conversion will have no effect on the revenue production or revenue potential of the concessions program, because that space was already, it wasn't, we never contemplated it being a piece of, a part of this concessions program to begin with. So it's not like by converting it now, we're foregoing revenue that we had counted on. Like we haven't counted on that revenue for years.
That is correct.
Right.
That is a correct statement, ma'am.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, is there any further discussion on the MDOT agenda?
Did you want to talk about something else?
I was going to talk about the use of the agreement, but
I don't want to. Now, motion to approve the MDOT
agenda. Motion to approve the MDOT agenda.
And is there a second?
Second.
Thank you so much. We will conclude with the DGS agenda. Secretary Charlie, good morning.
Good morning, sir, Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, and Mr. Treasurer. For the record, I'm the Chief Charter Secretary of the Maryland Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 56 items in our agenda. We are withdrawing one item today. That's item 5 CGL. Our agenda does feature 33 capital grants and loans totaling more than $54.1 million. I wanted to highlight just one in particular, and that's item 6CGL, which provides $887,000 to Carroll Hospital Center for the renovation and design and redesign of their existing emergency department. Adding 3,000 additional square feet, the project will add a new 5-bed psychiatric and behavioral health pod, a large capacity trauma room, 8 additional triage spaces, and improved ambulance offload area. As we continue to keep an eye on our certified small business participation, our agenda does feature 2 contract actions to certified small businesses totaling more than $1 million. And we have AZ representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. I'd like to highlight a few things. And Secretary, I'm glad you're here. There it is. The first one, the request from DNR, the Board of Revenue Sharing Contracts and Kaizen Laboratories for digital reservation system practice to our absolutely beautiful state parks. We continue to expand under your leadership, which we're very, very thankful for. And so I'd like to invite you up just to talk to you about that.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, Secretary Josh Kurtz, Department of Natural Resources. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak about 56 IT supplemental. I think it's important to kind of get a sense for why we needed this, but really what this does is it expands an existing successful pilot that we had bid previously to help the department manage people and traffic flow in all of our state, or in 5 state parks. And so if you go back to about pre-COVID time, our state park visitorship spiked significantly, and 5 parks in particular were really hit hard by that. We had over 166 unexpected capacity closures at those 5 parks in 2024. And really what that meant was the department had to put more of our park rangers in the front to manage traffic. We had to hire MSP, NRP overtime, Natural Resources Police, Maryland State Police overtime to be able to manage that. And it was creating not only nuisances, but unsafe situations. At Greenbrier, we had traffic that backed up all the way to 70 on July 4th, 2024. So we worked with the legislature, and I think really important from those conversations is we took away the need to fix that issue, but not curtail access to the parks. And so we bid a pilot where we were looking for something fairly unique. We wanted something that in real time could allow us to know exactly how many people were in the parks, maintain the capacity that was safe, and still give access. And so this was bid on by Kaizen, and what they created for us is a one of one. It's unique to Maryland. And what it does is it has a QR code. You can pay for your reservation in advance, use the QR code to get in, and it has plate readers. So when you leave, it opens up that space in the park for somebody else to be able to use. Other states that we looked at, basically they would allot, you know, the 100 that they had for the day, and when people left, you couldn't bring more people in unless you had a park ranger there. So we wanted to make sure that it was not a static program. This was incredibly valuable to us. We went from, again, 166 capacity closures to 0. And we did an extensive amount of surveying at the completion of this project, and what we heard from our visitors was that this was not only incredibly well-supported, but they wanted to see it expanded. Imagine you are taking your kids to Greenbrier on July 4th. You have to get into the queue at 3:30 in the morning and just hope that you're there in time to get in. So we fixed for that, and I think what we heard was people very excited about that. This also gave us some insight into safety in the parks that we didn't fully have. One thing that we were able to do, when the park closes now, if someone's in the park, we know exactly who they are, we can get in contact with them quickly. Before, we had to, you know, run the license plate, try to figure out who was using the car. And so this gives us updated safety information, and frankly, it helps us with our budget. This allows us to do cost recovery. In the park service, we have a thing called the Honor Box, which if you've been to a park in the off season, you slide your money in, and nobody's there to see if you did it. So we wondered to ourselves, is our people contributing? So we did a pilot in one park, and we had a 352% increase in revenue without changing fees or anything, just over cost recovery. And so this contract would expand this to some additional state parks and to shooting ranges. And really, the shooting ranges is about safety. Right now, we are not sure who's using the ranges at any point in time, and we want to ensure that they are not exceeding the capacity. We have unsafe situations there. And so we chose to expand this because Kaizen managed all of the hardware for us. They did all the purchase on the front end, all of the services that were needed to maintain it. If we were to not move forward with this contract, they would be removing all of the hardware from those 5 parks. this summer. Like, that would start this weekend on Memorial Day. We would no longer have the reservation system for this summer. This project does allow us to continue, again, expand that over the next couple years to ensure that we're able to meet the needs and the safety of the visitors.
Are you going on this one?
No, I mean, I'll just say, Governor, I want to thank the department for reducing congestion at the parks. I really appreciate it. I have sat in many a line in my car with my kids. So I think the pilot reservation system has made a real difference, and it's something a lot of people are going to be very grateful to have this Memorial Day weekend moving forward. So I really appreciate that the project is working well. I think it's a great idea. I completely support the concept of it. I'm voting no on this contract because I just don't think the sole source procurement method was justified here. I do believe that competitive contracts are how we get best value for the state. I absolutely support the goal of the contract. I just want to make sure that companies that are bidding in Maryland have full expectation that they will be required to go through a competitive bid process. So thank you. Thanks, Mr. Secretary. Thanks, Governor.
Thank you, Governor. I'm going to go forward, but I echo the comptroller's concern when I read a little bit of the history of the background on it. I saw that there were only two bidders for the pilot, but as it was correctly noted by DVS Council, BPA Council, and other vendors known as going to lead to a much larger project, then you might have gotten four in the pilot or a queue from. So, it leaves an open-ended question, did we get best value simply because, potential bidders thought that this was a small project that wasn't worth it? I think it was for 5 properties and now it's 20. So, ultimately, I think it needs to move forward, so I'm going to support it. But I definitely share the comptroller's concerns about that, and hopefully, on future items, if we know it's going to clean up better, if there's an opportunity to sort of put that in there, even if it's alluding to it could be something bigger. I don't have to tell the two next to me about what kind of fiscal position. I don't know if anybody's wrong. This is fiscal thinking. We've got to manage every dollar to the best of our ability, and I know everyone's trying, but, If we can sort of just keep that in mind with the contracts, I think that would be very beneficial.
Absolutely. I completely appreciate both of those, and I think that's something we'll make very clear in any pilot we put forward. We want to make sure it worked, and but to that point, I think we could definitely encourage in the future more people to bid.
And the Secretary, except there are us, like, call about item 51, which are requests from the new lease for the declaration of comment on property on Bay's Oak, Colorado Landfill, located in Gun Power Falls, State Park. So, considering you also want to talk about it.
Absolutely. Good morning, Governor Moore, Comptroller Learman, Treasurer Davis, for the record, Josh Kurtz, Department of Natural Resources Secretary, to discuss DGS item 51LL. And today we bring before you an amended lease that represents a definitive and long-awaited solution to a controversy spanning decades. The permanent closure of the Days Cove rubble fill and the restoration of this land to public park, which was the plan that was put in place and was the clear intent in 1986 when the state first purchased the property. This lease is meticulously crafted path to closure. The agreement provides a 4-year operational period for Days Cove's reclamation to fill out the site to enable it to be safely graded for park use. This period will ensure existing rubble fill customers can find new locations to dispose of their rubble, and it will protect the state financially by securing the funds from the company to close and cap the landfill. This is the best deal, I'm confident, the best deal that we could have secured. And I know that some neighbors of the landfill have shared their concerns with the board, and they've also shared them with us. And we've spent the past several months meeting directly with community members and advocates and the environmental community to find the best path forward to close this facility quickly, while also minimizing long-term environmental impacts and maintenance requirements. And we really appreciate the continued partnership with the community and with the vendor. I think this was 2 months of a very good, honest conversation that has resulted in the best possible lease. The lease fixes a previous error by transferring the estimated $7 million in cleanup funds in the Days Cove account to the state to ensure effective remediation takes place. Without this lease, we cannot guarantee that those cleanup funds can be accessed by the state. We've shortened the operational time period, which was originally proposed at 5 years, down to 4 years in this updated version, and the rubble fills operation will cease by the end of 2029. The shortened timeline was recommended by an independent engineering analysis by Maryland Environmental Service. I think this was incredibly helpful for them to help us evaluate the operations and the closure and make sure that we have the best possible outcome for all Marylanders and the health of our environment. The amended lease also guarantees formal oversight of the cleanup process. So DNR will hire a third-party engineer to regularly assess the program on meeting the lease terms and deadlines, and therefore, and it will be ready to finally close. The agreement also includes a $5 million penalty if DSCO fails to complete the closure, post-closure, and reclamation activities to return the land to recreational use. The four-year operational runway is important for the region's economy and environmental safety, which I think might be a little bit confusing, but allowing this period actually provides the landfill to be filled and filled correctly so that we can have successful closure while also having ongoing revenue from the facility. I also want to directly address some of the key environmental concerns. MDE has worked to address concerns about the discharge permit. Following hundreds of public comments, MDE negotiated with the operator to remove the request to double the discharge volume, and the updated permit will also include additional monitoring requirements to ensure that the facility's permit is in line with bay cleanup goals. Once the operator has completed the capping process, which involves removing items for recycling, covering the land with a layer of dirt, and planting vegetation to reduce runoff, DNR will manage the land as part of Gunpowder State Falls, and we're excited to solicit public feedback before determining its final use. There's some incredible models all over the state of Maryland how to do this successfully. To that end, one's Annapolis Waterworks Park right down the street, which we toured recently. To that end, I want to reiterate the most important part of this lease, which has remained true throughout this process. For the first time since we purchased this land, you have a lease in front of you that will guarantee closure of this facility and to turn it back over to the hands of the people of Maryland where it was originally intended and rightfully belongs. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you so much. And I know we have a few speaker requests to sign as well. And so first, I'd like to recognize Lindsay Crone, the Executive Director of the Gunpowder Valley Conservatory, who joins us to speak on this item. Ms. Crone, good morning.
For the record, Lindsay Crone, Executive Director, Gunpowder Valley Conservancy, a land preservation and watershed restoration nonprofit serving 488 square miles of Central Maryland. I want to begin with gratitude to DNR for your engagement throughout this process. It has been sincere and it has made real progress. To the Comptroller's Office, thank you for requesting community input at the outset and for your continued work on the lease and the escrow. We also appreciate that the lease term has been shortened by 1 year based on MES's assessment. We understand that past failures cannot be fully undone through this lease alone, and that the path forward must work within the realities of the current situation. Days Cove is not just any piece of land. It sits within Gunpowder Falls State Park and carries the formal designation of an irreplaceable natural area, home to rare and threatened species. Hundreds of residents recreate in the tidal gunpowder. Many depend on nearby wells for their drinking water. And they have shown up through public comments, through monthly meetings, and they believe that this place is worth protecting, so do we. We are asking for the board to ensure five protections. First, a critical areas assessment now. The last one was conducted in 2004. It's been 22 years. The natural area has changed, as has landfill operations. Second, the independent expert oversight starting immediately. We request that the state contract with an independent landfill expert to monitor the operator's progress towards the December 2029 deadline and verify compliance with state regulations. Third, a performance bond with real value. A financial penalty means nothing if the operator lacks the assets to pay it. Fourth, accountability on water quality. MDE must do more than monitor. It must levy penalties for exceedances, release monitoring data in a timely manner, and enforce consistently. And our fifth and final request, regular transparency. We ask DNR and MDE to commit to at least 2 open community meetings per year for the full duration of the lease. Trust is rebuilt through consistent actions. We are encouraged that this lease will finally bring approximately $7 million in escrow funds under state control. Gunpowder Valley Conservancy is not here to obstruct. We are here because this community has been patient for decades, and because Days Cove deserves better than another lease that falls short. Thank you.
Excuse me. And here's the points that you outlined. Have they been shared with the department, or is this first public hearing of the advocacy?
We have been, for the last 6 months, in conversations almost bi-weekly with DNR on this topic. And as we have gone through the process, we have all learned new things about the project. So these have been voiced.
So, but I think for the 5 or 6 things you outlined and those specific points, they here are.
Yes.
Let's next also like to recognize Captain Mark. Wow, that's a joint this.
So for the record, I'm Catherine Jean Reiner Martin, on behalf of my family, 5 generations on the Gunpowder River in Oliver Beach since 1936, including my mother, Vera Reiner, who is the last surviving member of the Gunpowder State Park Advisory Commission, who was in the room in the 1980s and 90s when acquisition and land use plans for the park were deliberated, with promises that the operations, sludge mining and landfill operations, would be very limited in time span and be closed by the year 2000. To set the stage,
this represents Days Cove. I have some photos of some cards of this that I would like to share. As you enter Days Cove by kayak, I'm happy to take anybody there to share this space. This is what you see. I took a picture. It was the first time I took a photo when I was kayaking, and my husband painted it. It gives you a sense of just the beauty. Instead, the whole area has 3 active landfills, 2 rubble and 1 sanitary landfill within 1 nautical mile of each other, overburdening the Bird and Gunpowder Rivers with solid waste and its leachate. I really thank all, as Lindsay did, all the state agencies and representatives who engage with the community and the environmental task force leaders for our historical and professional knowledge during the current lease. And as such, as Lindsay mentioned, we focused on the escrow, lease length, protective oversight, and coordination between the agencies. We acknowledge and are grateful for the proposed quick movement on the escrow, a shortened lease, and independent oversight for operations with penalties. Before the record, we strongly urge that the state proceed as soon as possible with the overdue update your critical areas assessment as the last one. The title line has changed since 2004. In fact, it changed in Isabel, and there has not been a new critical areas assessment since then. So one was missed because it's supposed to be done every 12 years. Also, that the state quickly contract with the landfill expert to ensure the operator stays on track to meet all state regulations, including site preparation requirements, by the no later than December 31st, 2029 deadline. That the operator post a bail or other mechanism to provide the state with leverage on performance. And then also DNR, the Park Service, and MDE agree to 2 open meetings annually with the community to demonstrate that transparency. In addition, I strongly urge continued engagement with the task force, which has been very effective in highlighting ways to break down the silos between agencies. The agencies are DNR as the landowner and the future landfill permit holder, the state parks as the land manager, NDE for their discharge permit, so that it has the strongest, most coordinated oversight of one of Maryland's irreplaceable natural areas, the Days Cove area of the Gunpowder State Park. Thank you very much. Oh, any questions?
Good, thank you.
Are there any questions on this side?
I just have a sort of comment question for, I guess, Secretary Kurtz, probably.
Sure.
No offense, Secretary.
No.
Good morning, again, Secretary Kurtz. I actually want to start by also expressing my appreciation to you and your team for keeping me and my team up as well as engaging with the community to address their concerns about this data. As you know, 10 years ago, a promise was made not only to the Board of Public Works, but also to the community that this landfill would cease operations by 2025. None of us were here then, but that was also pre-COVID. Many things changed since then, and we are not in a place where it makes sense for the landfill to cease operations right now. But when this item was initially presented in December, I was prepared to vote against it because of past promises that have been made. And I think being here today, when I'm going to vote for it, and I think others are going to as well, I think really demonstrates your hard work, the hard work of our community groups for coming to the table, all the neighbors, the operator, for his patience and persistence, and also demonstrates the value of the Board of Public Works. Having a transparent and a complete look at contracts that are coming that affect not just an agency, but a community. And so I also wanted to give a shout out to our forebears who created the Board of Public Works to allow for meaningful engagement like this. So thank you for your engagement with community stakeholders and listening to the expertise of MES, and thank you to the operator and advocates and their patience and partnership as well. Just a couple quick questions. Can you discuss what the operating period of the lease is before us and how that time frame was determined and when specifically the department intends for the process to cap and close to begin that process to begin and finish?
Yes, and so the operational period is can cease no later than December 31st, 2029. And the reason for that is we need to fill the landfill till it gets to a grade that it can be capped on a singular grade. The analysis done by MES and in partnership with the contractor really showed how we could get to a grade a little bit quicker than we had seen the first time. And so we really appreciate that engineering study and all the support from MES through this. The next phase would then kick off and end no later than December 31st, 2032. And so that phase is the one, and to the points of the advocates, we are going to be hiring that the third party immediately to help us to ensure as we move forward in the operational space, we don't get to the end of the line, which I think has kept happening over and over, and we aren't where we need to be in order to move to capping. And so that's really important for all of us to be able to continue to work together, but also be able to continue to ensure that we're meeting those checkpoints along the way to get to the standard grade so that we can step into capping. That time frame will also give us the time to work with the community on what it's going to look like. You go and, you know, we went toward the Waterworks Park. They did solar on theirs with a bike trailer on the bottom. MES proposed some plans for pollinator habitat reforestation with a really nice trail. We've seen, you know, obviously we're not going to do this here, but we went to Montgomery County where they did a golf course on theirs, right? So there's a lot of things that could happen here, and so we'll engage the community around that both of those periods.
That's great. So I think you already answered this, really. You're going to be monitoring and keeping the community informed. That's all for me. I just really appreciate you walking through everything. And, you know, a decade ago, a different secretary made a different promise, and I'm excited to see this get followed through. And really, again, I appreciate all of your work and that of the advocates community.
If I may really quickly recognize Deputy Secretary Gosselin and Chief of Staff Camille Williams, who did all of that in community.
Thank you,
Mom. Is there any further stuff on the BGS, Jen?
Item 5, CGL item 5, was that withdrawn?
Yes, item 5, CGL withdrawn. Yep. And if there's no further discussion, I actually want to separate item 56. And so we'll first take up item 56. And on that item, we may have a motion to I will second it. And so the item moves to the board for voting negative. On the remainder of the DGS BGS agenda. Ben, I have a motion to approve the BGS agenda.
I motion to approve the BGS agenda.
And is there anything? Outstanding. Thank you so much. That concludes today's meeting for public works.
If I can, any of you knew about a month and a half ago, I had tragic loss in my staffing. Today, well, I guess it's not the first day, but about a week ago, I was able to hire a new executive assistant. She's new to this role, but we had previously worked with the Economic Matters Committee, Kayla Thompson, so I want to introduce her to all of you.
Well, welcome.
Welcome.
We're coming back
from more. Best of luck.
Yeah. Steve.
That's
good. One last one. This is something entirely different. And I held it for last meeting. I wanted to hold it to when you were here, Governor. A couple weeks ago, my fraternity, Omega Psi Phi fraternity, they held a town hall among other things in Prince George's County, a regional contest that was held in the county, and they had a town hall featuring the governor, Congressman Clyburn, and it was a very lively, informative discussion. Probably about 800 to 1,000 people there, and they're still talking about it, like the community at large, not just the fraternity. Times more being insightful, you know, they took a lot away from just from the state of everything. So I wanted to publicly thank you for attending that event and for you and the congressman having such a lively discussion and you know, to never do too much to continue educating the public on the things that are going on. So they really appreciated it. I wanted to express my appreciation for
I appreciate it. It was fantastic in the Congress. You can literally listen to all of that all day long. Yeah, he was there on the quarter, the OG and quarter, the OG and quarter. It was great. Please thank you, Megan, for allowing me out.
Well, you know, I always say, like, you got to see an hour was in, man. Out the little man was in.
That's right. You need both. And our next meeting will be on June 3rd, and we'll be in the Treasury Building. So it'll be very, very exciting. So thank you all. We are officiating.
Off the record at 10:53.